Thank you, Mr. Bradford. Agenda item number 7, Mr. Thomas Perry.
Morning, Commissioner Bull, members of the commission. My name is Jay Woodward. I have the privilege, I guess I'd say, of handling Lancaster and Middlesex County, the mouth of the Rappahannock River, and that's where we're headed to on this next project. Mr. Perry is requesting authorization to deploy multiple lines of commercial oyster aquaculture floats anchored to the bottom of Chesapeake Bay in a long line configuration over 25 acres, approximately 1/2 mile north of Windmill Point in Lancaster County. The project is protested by a nearby upland riparian landowner. Project location is here. I don't know why my circles aren't showing up. At any rate, this is the Norris Bridge coming into Whitestone, Windmill Point proper. This area is known locally as Fleet's Island, and the project location is just here. There is a 25-acre area that Mr. Perry is proposing, and I'm going to apologize. I'm going to switch to the presentation I meant to give. This one didn't take properly. Operator error on my part. Bear with me for one moment, if you don't mind. See if this is the line I meant to show you.
It's in here on our vicinity book.
Yeah,
vicinity map.
The other stuff is not showing up. At any rate, we'll move forward. The proposal is for a floating aquaculture system using what's termed oyster grove floats. They've been used in other locations around Chesapeake Bay and around on the East Coast, I believe. Most recently, the commission approved a project using oyster grove floats in a Anderson's Net project up off the York River on the Propatank River, mouth of the Propatank. In this location, the site location, the bay 45 miles south to the mouth of the bay is the Fetch. 20 miles to the north is Eastern Shore, and about 20 miles to the northeast is Maryland. So there's a huge Fetch in the area. The near shore area is about 1,000 feet. It doesn't get any deeper than about 3 feet of water.
How deep?
3 feet of water for approximately 1,000 feet offshore. You can see the shoaling in the area. These are the application drawings that came in. The drawings that you're going to see here are actually part of the Army Corps of Engineers permit that has been issued for this project. We've gone through many different iterations, but this is what we are working on now. It's a reduction over the original request from 50 acres down to 25 acres. In addition, Mr. Perry, through the concerns raised by the adjacent property owners, has moved the entire array offshore approximately 300 feet to allow for transient use and bathing use of the nearshore beach area. The opponent of the project is Mr. Gibson Wright, who owns about 60 acres in this vicinity here and developed the subdivision to the north. A little bit closer look, showing about 300 feet offshore. This is a total build-out, 25 acres, buoys marking the perimeter, and these represent lines. I don't know why my project is not showing up on here. This is Mr. Gibson Wright's property. You will see the breakwaters are located in this location here. He also owns this parcel, which is predominantly tidal and non-tidal wetland. There is some upland that's developable. It's my understanding he is trying to or has acquired the approval to develop two additional lots over this parcel. All of these lots down here are owned by Susan Harwood. These are undeveloped, so you get down to about this location, and they'll show up on the aerial photograph. This is the evacuation plan for the storm contingency that both staff,
Jay, it doesn't look like an evacuation plan.
Well, evacuation sites. They are proposing to, at build out, be able to remove these floats if necessary in the event of an impending storm. Phase one, phase two, and so forth would be relocated to another more protected area. This also shows the star-approved hazard buoys that will be marking the perimeter of the grow-out area. Again, project location here, the evacuation route would be to the north and west into Anti-Poison Creek, Little Bay, onto a lease owned by Dustin Crenshaw, leased from the Commonwealth by Dustin Crenshaw. More specifically, the floats would be sunk onto the bottom. These cages can be either float or you can flood them and they'll sink to the bottom, and they would be sunk onto the bottom of this lease in the event of a hurricane. Additional drawings showing the array. What you would have is a auger, let's say in the near shore, a long line to an offshore auger, and 15 floats that run along this this line. And then there would be, in his drawings, another set of 15 to the west of that. A little bit more detail showing the auger, the line, and how the floats themselves or cages are tethered to that long line. And both buoys marking the perimeter and buoys marking the individual long lines. Once again, the storm plan would allow the structures to be towed into the protected area of Fleet's Bay and Poison Creek, then flooded and sunk to the bottom, where they would remain until the storm passed. Approximate spacing 28 feet between long lines. Again, this was one long line of 15. There would be another one offshore. So each row, if you will, would be 30 floats in two separate long lines by however many. Total build out would be 2,880 floats over the 5-year build out that is being proposed.
Can I ask you a question there?
Yes, sir.
You said it was moved about 300 feet offshore to allow for navigation and also use of the water, right?
Not so much for navigation. The concerns raised by the adjoining upland landowners were more along the lines of bathing and walking up and down the beach. It's so shallow there, it could allow for navigation.
What kind of bridge have you made for this these buoys to be lit for navigation purposes?
They are not proposed to be lit, it's my understanding. In the Corps' review under the Section 10 of the Rivers and Harbors Act, looks at and coordinates with the Coast Guard for navigation issues, and the buoys and the marking system that is being proposed now is in compliance with what the Coast Guard requires for such hazards.
Thank you.
Again, this just gives a little detail of how the build-out would proceed. Year one, 200 floats. Year two, 500 floats, and so forth. The work boats, my understanding, they're upping that a little bit from a skiff to a larger dead rise type work boat. All of those details the applicant can go into. But the idea being, this would be kind of the reverse order of the evacuation route. They would go in and take sections out if they felt it necessary due to an impending storm. These are some slides showing the oyster growth system. Again, these are plastic tanks that, when empty, provide buoyancy, floating the cages above the long line. And when it once flooded, they act as ballast to sink it to the bottom. There's some photos of that were submitted with the application, the actual floats, the augers. I had a really good PowerPoint. I don't know what's going on here. But at any rate, This is a site location on a good day. It's very exposed. You've got virtually unlimited fetch to the southeast and over 20 miles to the east, to the northeast. So we were very concerned, staff was very concerned with the number of structures that are going to be affixed to the bottom and the likelihood or the possibility that they could become loose in a storm and end up damaging private property or becoming hazards to navigation. So we've worked long and hard with the applicant to be more comfortable with this whole proposal. I am standing now looking toward what you'll see is one of the, I think there's only three homes in the Henry's Island subdivision. These are offshore breakwaters that were installed some years ago before the homes were actually built. And then directly to my left, inshore, would be the land of Susan Harwood. She is not objecting. Mr. Gibson Wright's property starts somewhere to the north of this. Again, now looking more southeast, you can see the majority of this damage was done in Isabel, but it's a very exposed area. VIMS indicates somewhere on the order of 3 to 4 feet of erosion annually in this location. I'll just leave that one up here for now. The proposal is protested by Mr. Wright. I spoke with Mr. Wright yesterday. He indicated he would likely not come today. I don't know if he's here or not. I explained to him what our staff recommendation was going to be for a reduced footprint, less floats, and a movement to the southeast away from his property line, which was originally done by the applicant who shifted it south, and we would be recommending moving it further south. Mr. Wright indicated to me that he would prefer, if the commission does approve it, to keep it basically as far away from his property as possible. He wants to develop this portion in here. This is some of his property. Again, the majority of his property is tidal marsh. This actually represents two lots that have been platted and approved by the county. This is actually an open pile wooden vehicle access bridge to get to it. Likely he would need to do that as well to get to the remaining lots in this location. Mrs. Harwood's property starting in this location is at the north end of this cottage community, the last house being here. I believe Mrs. Harwood's cottage is in this location. I'll bring it up now. Mr. Crenshaw, who is a partner with Mr. Perry, who has the leased ground to where the floats will be taken during a storm event if necessary. He lives in this cottage community in some location. So that's Mr. Wright's concerns. If he's here, he'll express those as well. VIMS is indicating the potential for adverse environmental impact to the littoral environment to be minimal. Department of Conservation and Recreation indicates there are natural heritage resources in the area. I call them those resources are tiger beetles, northeastern beach tiger beetles. But as this proposal is completely offshore, there's not even to be any transit across the shoreline, that they indicate those impacts are likely to be minimal, negligible. Corps of Engineers has issued their regional permit. because the Department of Environmental Quality has waived the water quality requirement for certain permits, a DEQ permit for water quality is not required. It's already met by the Corps of Engineers regional permit. Lancaster County Wetlands Board indicates that there is not a wetland permit required, as there is to be no ingress and egress across the intertidal area beach, the intertidal beach. In summary, the commission is generally supportive of aquaculture projects throughout the Commonwealth. There's new and better mouse traps out there all the time. We're seeing new things all the time. So we support aquaculture where there are no user conflicts. During our review, I looked, in all the years I've been going out to this beach, and I go out there on nice days a lot of times, I don't see any crab pots. People don't pot in this area. There is a pound net site located here. I think he's actually removed his pound net from that location because it just was taking a hammering. On my good slideshow, I actually the other day was out there and saw one crab pot washed up on the beach and a gill net washed inshore. So there is some fishing in the area. I don't know where it occurs, but it's likely that this is not going to cause a conflict with any ongoing commercial or recreational activities because of the shallow nature and because of the exposed nature of the area. Again, I mentioned the erosion rate of about 3 feet per year. There's a report done by Dr. Basco at Old Dominion indicating that the area would experience a potential wave height of 5.5 feet with a period of 5 seconds. So every 5 seconds, you're getting a 5-foot wave with winds of just 35 miles an hour. So come hurricane time, it's going to be a whole lot worse. Mr. Perry, however, believes the system can withstand the anticipated wave climate, but staff believes it would be prudent to proceed in a little bit more conservative way. Give them a little bit to start with and see where we go from there. Along that line, I'm going to go ahead and read the recommendations that are on page 1.3 of your evaluation into the record. And at this point, staff would recommend approval of no more than 500 floats over the first 2 years with an annual reporting requirement that he would report on production and any problems that he would have. The applicant could then apply after that time to expand the operation to either the full build-out or something more than he would have. That request would require an additional public interest review. We would go back to the newspaper. We would go back to the adjoining property owners. We would go back to all of the agencies that commented initially and subject it to an entirely new public interest review, even though it's just an expansion of the existing. We would require submittal of revised drawings of the area necessary for those 500 floats. Again, in light of Mr. Wright's concerns, we would recommend that those floats be moved to the southernmost area of what was proposed. Bear with me 1 second. I apologize for this. I ran through it twice. I got the verification of that, and why it's not coming up, I don't know. This is the original 25-acre request. We would come up with what we are recommending is a reduction. This would be all 2,880 floats. We are recommending no more than 500 floats over the first 2 years and would recommend it be located in somewhere either inshore or offshore, but to the southeasternmost part of this polygon, the furthest away from Mr. Wright's property. Once we get the revised drawing showing the physical encroachment over where those 500 floats are going to be, we recommend a royalty, an annual royalty at half a cent a square foot, and that would be annual, in accordance with what we'd normally recommend for aquaculture. The third special condition would be a surety bond in the amount of $7,500. To cover the cost of removal of those 500 floats in the event of failure should the applicant not be able to do that. So if for whatever reason the money doesn't exist to remove the stuff, the floats and the augers and the lines, then the commission would have money to cause that removal. There are other special conditions that we've used in the past for similar type projects like the Anderson's Neck project I mentioned previously. Those I'm also going to read directly into the record. The permit and authorization to retain the structure shall be valid for a period of 5 years. After 5 years, the permittee may request the commission reevaluate the project and seek authorization to continue the activity for an additional period of time. The public shall not be excluded from any areas not physically occupied by the authorized structures. The permittee shall properly maintain all structures and shall remove all structures within 5 days upon falling into a state of disrepair or upon cessation of the use of those structures for aquaculture. Each individual cage, all structures must be individually tagged per the Corps' requirement and marked and located in accordance with all applicable U.S. Coast Guard requirements. The applicant will adhere to the storm contingency plan I showed you before, and the hurricane evacuation route. Those drawings were dated, received May 21st, 2014. Should unforeseen conflicts arise, the commission may elect to hold an additional public hearing, at which time they may elect to revoke the permit and direct removal of any or all of the authorized floats. All commercial aquaculture activities conducted in association with the structures authorized herein shall be conducted in compliance with all relevant VMRC and Department of Health requirements for aquaculture. The permit shall not be issued until all approvals have been secured by the Department of Health. Permittee shall be required to remove or relocate any of the structures which are determined to be in the way of any approved shoreline projects requested by an adjacent upland property owner within their riparian area. So should additional breakwaters be proposed in the future, he would be required to move offshore. We feel with these special conditions, along with our standard permit conditions, it would further minimize any potential impacts to the adjacent property owners and to the marine resources in the area, sufficient safeguards to allow this commercial enterprise to move forward, at least in this reduced capacity. And once again, I will apologize that my good slideshow is not available. I'm going to get that fixed before we move forward to the next one. And I'm happy to answer any questions. The applicant is here today. I'm not sure who else is here, either for or against.
Thank you, Ms. Warder. Any questions from the commission? Mr. Seth?
It seems like there's a pretty extensive evacuation plan that's in place now. What triggers the evacuation? What event?
We have left that to the applicant. I don't think it's something that the commission is going to trigger by, you know, news forecast. In meeting with the applicant and his partner, they have indicated sit on the shoreline and watch the weather, and when it looks like it's going to be bad, they'll either start moving stuff, or Mr. Perry is in the process of acquiring the lease, the underlying fee simple, or the underlying lease, oyster ground lease, for the area, in which case they could be sunk in place, which would get them a little bit out of the wave climate. But it's nothing that VMRC would trigger.
Thank you. Question. You say they could be sunk in place. How do you sink these things? What? They're floating. Explain that to me.
Okay, well, let me just go to one of the drawings here. Well, in this lower photograph, these black tanks are essentially just that. There's a cap on the end, and when they are empty and full of air, they're buoyant. And when you pull the plug and they flood, they'll sink. That's my understanding. I haven't used them, but that's my understanding. And again, the applicant can probably, he's worked with them before, he can probably give you some more detail on that.
Well, it's intended that these float all the time.
They can be used either way. My understanding is part of the beauty of these structures is they can be used either way. Now, if they wanted to just use bottom cages, there would be no need to have the additional plastic floats attached, and they would go with a more traditional, which I have a picture of in my other slide presentation, a more traditional on-bottom cages. It would be the weight of the cage and the oysters themselves would settle it into the bottom, and that's how they're held at the bottom.
Ms. Erskine.
You referenced the other application previous to this that was approved using this system, Anderson Neck, I believe.
Yes.
And I'm just curious, did they have similar special conditions? Did they have a phased-in approach, or was their proposal approved as submitted? And I would also ask whether or not they had a trigger for their evacuation plan. Did they have one? I realize the environment's very different,
yes.
But did they have any of these
my
special conditions?
I didn't handle that project, but my understanding was there was There was a contingency plan, but it wasn't an evacuation plan. I may be wrong. But that project was, again, in a very different environment. It was up the York River, off the York River in the Propatank Bay, and a much more, much less weather-impacted area. But I don't believe, looks like Randy Owens ready to tell me exactly, or tell you exactly what that has. That's okay with the commission.
Please, Mr. Owen.
Could you restate the question?
And there was a reference by staff about the previous application using this kind of system, and I was just wondering what the commission, after having permitted that, what their experience has been. Has it been a successful system? Did you do a phased-in approach? It seems there's concern over this application, not only because of the environment, but that it's testing new gear. So I was just wondering what the experience of the commission was previously.
We worked with the applicants, Anderson's Neck Oyster Company, and they're in Propatank Creek, not in the York River. They originally wanted almost 7,000 floats, and from working with them and the applicant, we arrived at an agreeable number of 1,690 floats. The Corps of Engineers actually took that lead when it came to what happens if these are hit by storm. They wanted each float individually tagged with a waterproof tag so that if any float ends up anywhere, they could say, well, you need to go get that, it's yours. There was also two permitted floating oyster plexes, which were the like a floating workshop out there. They've constructed one. It's in place. It's anchored. We bonded both it and the cages in case it wound up in a marsh in the bottom of the York River or the bottom of the creek, such that we could get it removed if we had to with the bond in place. So, and then they had to file basically a storm contingency plan, which we put into the permit, and it was basically worked out with Corps of Engineers. They wanted for their, given their authority on the Rivers and Harbors Act and navigation, they wanted that in place. We worked very carefully with them and the Coast Guard and the applicant to get that in place. So hope that answers your question.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Owen.
That area is pretty rough.
Ms. Haney.
As to the evacuation plan, you said the long line consisted of two rows of 15 cages. If they had to move one long line of 30 cages, how long would it take them to move them and sink them?
Again, I would be more comfortable having the applicant answer those questions.
Any other questions from the commission? Thank you, Ms. Woodward. Is Mr. Thomas Perry present or represented? Please come forward, sir. You hereby swear the truth. The testimony we give here today will be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help you God.
I do.
Please state your name for the record.
Tom Perry.
Mr. Perry, here, I think you've heard some of the questions. Would you like to address them?
Yes, I would. I can answer your question right now. Back somewhere in here looking at the plan. So here I have it scaled out 1 year, 2 year, 3 year, 4 year, 5 year. Difficult to see with the light. Maybe we can hit the light. So here, I'm trying to keep everything within a workday. So if the storm's coming, I can get everything removed in under 8 hours. Or nothing longer than a workday. So here, the first year, everything will be able to be moved within, here we have 6.25 hours. The second year, it will be more like 15 hours. With the storm imminent, I think 2 days is more of enough time for us to certainly move everything we have. And as the structure and the lease gets bigger, we're going to have more boats to be able to move more structures per hour. So that number actually goes down as the lease grows.
Thank you.
Kathy, we get the lights, please?
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. What else can you tell the commission about this project?
Okay, I actually have put a presentation together.
Oh, that's fine.
And I can show you that, and I'll keep it brief. And you guys can ask any specific questions, and I'll hopefully be able to answer them and go over them.
here, just one more point, suspended aquaculture system. I have two main goals here. The first one is to increase oyster marketability and increase oyster profitability. And we're getting there. We're looking to really decrease oyster mortalities to less than 5%. We're looking to produce an oyster with higher meat yield. We're looking to produce oysters with thicker and more durable shells, which the high energy environment does and growing oysters at the surface does. We're looking to avoid wormholes in shell stock and avoid sponge-borne diseases, such as Cleona SPP, which tend to settle more on oysters that are on the bottom. We're not going to avoid it, but we're going to certainly minimize it significantly, growing oysters on the surface. Diseases like Cleona, they cause oysters to break and really easily when you're shucking them on the half shell. Also looking to reduce exposure to runoff. As you heard, there's no complaints about where this location is for runoff, and it's because of where we chose it to be. It's in a very open area, and it's not up a creek or up a river. I'm also looking to decrease labor costs, not looking to tumble or sort our oysters nearly as much, looking for the natural environment to do that for us. My site requirements, high flow, looking for shallow water, 4 to 6 feet. I've gone up and down, back and forth this area, and it's around 4 to 6 feet. The nautical charts show around 2 to 3, but everywhere I go, it's 4 to 6 feet in here. I'm looking for an area that's also deep enough to access by boat. And also have people work from their feet if need be, which I believe is going to happen quite a bit, especially for drilling the 66-inch augers in the ground. Also looking for very strong substrate. In this area happens to have that substrate, so looking for sand and clay substrate with robust auger hold. So this area is the ideal location. Dustin and I have spent many, many months looking around the area for the best place to do this, and this is where we have found a place to do this. I had spent the past 4 years previously building a very similar system, almost identical, just north of Point Lookout, in very similar water location. Super high energy, extreme fetches in either direction, especially in the northeast direction where a lot of the prevailing heavy winds come from. And we've seen these cages in this system prevail and do really well in significant nor'easters that can reach 45, 50 miles an hour. And on the Potomac, I've seen the system do extremely well. Even when Sandy came through, nothing happened, and we had no breakdowns anywhere in this system with 75, 80 mile per hour winds. So maximum flow, 4 to 6 feet, and this area also has zero SAV. Also, this area is very unique because of this breakwater out here. A lot of the waves actually break significantly further offshore than the proposed lease, which is a big plus. We are looking for wave action, but we try to avoid those five-foot waves at 5 second increments as much as we can. I and Dustin have spent a lot of time watching storms out here on the beach. Dustin grew up out here. His grandmother owns a cottage just south. The waves break right there on that break zone. Of course, the end push comes in, but when you're looking to build a system like this, you do want to be out of initial crash zones. And in this particular case, where we are behind it and in front of it, because obviously the land itself is another crash zone. So here's an in-depth look at the oyster growth system. You already saw that from Jay's presentation. Here's a little more in-depth cross-section than what Jay had up there. This is something that I submitted afterwards. It just explains more of the lengths of the line that are being used and the thicknesses of the lines that are being used. The long line here is 3/4 of an inch. It's very thick. I have some line here if you'd like to take a look at it. I also have the specs for the break strength. These augers here are 66 inches long. The 62 inches of these augers of the length will actually be in the ground. Very little of the head will be exposed. You know, probably about the size of my fist will be exposed, and that's where I'll be making the connection with a 3/4 inch line.
See, what is the line made out of?
Nylon.
What is the useful life?
Useful life? Well, probably 5 to 7 years.
And if you want, so I have also specifics. So here's the line specification. So I'm using the bottom line that's highlighted in red for the long lines. This is a 3/4 inch. And the, let's see if they have the brake strength. The average brake strength of 13,800 pounds. So I tried to find the heaviest line that I could use and work with that is going to be able to hold these long lines. The long line, the lines that we use for the system that we built and is approved as a functioning business in Maryland, we actually use the 5/8 line. So
is it braided?
Yes, it is braided.
How many braids?
That's 3 strands. I have a 4-foot piece of a line here if you'd like to look at it. So this is going, then the auger, there's some auger specs here. And we've classified the soil here at a 6 classification. And so with that soil classification, this auger, which has a 10-inch auger head diameter, 1.25-inch thick shaft, and it's, like I said, 66 inches long. It has a pull-out strength of, I guess 13,000 pounds. And that's at 5 and at 6, 10,000 pounds. So 10,000 pounds of pressure, you need to be able to pull the auger straight up. So here's some more specifics about the float. Two airtight floats specifically designed to reach optimum buoyancy for feeding depth. Like sinking these floats are pretty easy. You get on one end, you hop in the water, you open the caps, you let it fill in, you drain it, you let them fill up, and they just sink straight to the bottom. And then when you pull them up, we have some mass and gas. We hook to the bridle, pull it straight up, empty the water out, put the caps back on, and then it's ready to float again. This system is very common in Prince Edward Island and areas up in Canada that do high volumes of oysters. And it's great for them because they are highly exposed and they have frequent issues with icing where they need to go to the bottom every year. So I could probably talk for hours. If you'd probably cut me off.
That's okay. Other questions from the commission? I have a question, Mr. Perry, here. It seems to me you picked this site on purpose for this kind of wave energy.
Certainly.
Would you talk a little bit more about what you expect out of that and the potential pitfalls?
Well, I'm looking for an area of high energy where my oysters are constantly being tumbled. And where the shell is constantly being, the bill is constantly being broken, and the oyster is laying down new shell, so I can get a very thick shell. And it's also going to provide very, you look at a lot of these oysters on the bottom, you see like spurts of growth. And you can tell, I think they're very pretty, but I'm looking for something that is a little more homogenous and looking for consistent growth rings. And this is something that this high energy environment is going to bring. Also looking to minimize disease issues, which I think the high energy area does. This specific location, it's wonderful because there's not a lot of peers here. There's not a lot of user conflict. I know some people are going to be opposed. I think this area is great for that. The bottom is wonderful, the sand, for drilling in augers and holding these systems. And it's also shallow enough for us to work it by foot and get in there by boat. So I'm really looking to drive down the costs on my labor end and not having to drive these oysters to shore and tumble them like a lot of these other oyster companies do, which they tumble them to break the chips off and to develop a prettier shell and not have that issue with oysters snapping on the half shell. And I'm not going to have to do that because nature is doing it for me.
I have a follow-up question, I guess. Sure. Is what you're posing here is... quite ambitious.
Certainly.
For Virginia, it's pretty experimental. Do you have a problem with the staff recommendation?
I do not. I've spoken with them about it, and it's completely reasonable.
It's good to hear. Thank you. Other questions from the commission?
Yes.
Ms. Beck.
You mentioned the water. Do you like the fact that there's a lot of flow there? Is that one of the things you like about it?
Precisely. I'm after that flow, very much so. Even on a very calm day, you're getting significant flow.
Right.
When you compare it to a creek, or you compare it, which gets shut down periodically for harvest, and certainly more flow than a river would have, but not all of the issues that a river may have with all the runoff during big rainstorms and such.
So any other questions from the commission? Mr. Erskine.
Mr. Perry, I agree with the commissioner that it's ambitious, but I applaud, you know, your willingness to try a new system maybe in a different area. I was wondering, it doesn't sound like you have an area or a design kind of landing site to work your oysters. In the previous, Mr. Owen indicated that there was an oysterplex that was permitted with the other application that was approved. Where do you propose to work your oysters? Will it be on a barge?
My business currently operates out of Antipoison Creek, which is right around the corner.
Right.
I can get here to my site in about 10 minutes. Let's see if there's... So Antipoison is about... operation is about right here.
Okay.
And Dustin and I currently operate a lease right about 80 acres right in here. And we have, you know, also this is the area for our storm evacuation plan. So we get out here at about 5 and up and around here at about 10 to 15.
Thank you.
Other questions from the commission? Thank you, Mr. Kurt.
I also have just some people that are in the area, local watermen who support the project. Can I submit it?
Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to be heard in favor of this project? Is anyone opposed to this project wishes to be heard? No one is against the proposal. Seeing none, the matter is before the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept staff's recommendation for Mr. Perry to move forward.
Motion by Mr. Beck here to accept staff recommendation.
I'll second.
Second by Mr. Neal. Any discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? The chair votes aye. Motion passes unanimously.